You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Coming up next, John Pillager talks about the Greek people being double-crossed, abandoned by their so-called radical leaders. Stay tuned. In Berkeley, I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. And we turn our attention back to Greece. And somebody who has been keeping a close eye on that situation is a good friend of this show, John Pillager, a noted award-winning filmmaker, documentarian, investigative reporter, truth teller. I like truth teller. John Pillager, welcome back to Flashpoints.
Thank you, Dennis. Very good to be back.
Well, it's good to have you with us. You have been keeping an eye on Greece. Let me get your overview, your sort of thumbnail sketch of what's happening here.
Well, I think Greece is important, obviously, for the Greek people because they've suffered so much. But it's important for all of us because here was a government that promoted itself and was accepted to a large degree as different, dare I say, radical, but as different, that it was going to take on these autocratic forces in Europe that have built this fortress of extreme capitalism, and I repeat that, extreme capitalism. Neoliberalism in the heart of the European Union really is an extreme version, and they were challenging that. They were saying, well, yes, we've got debts, but those debts were incurred by the super wealthy in Greece, all of them playing, being good neoliberals, if you like. And the Greek taxpayer, the ordinary Greek, did not incur these debts, and these debts of the Greek Parliament, after an audit, described them as odious, illegitimate, and illegal. And, you know, this is where we've moved out of Victorian times. This is not debtor prison times. The country is not going to be put in prison. This is what this government, the Syriza government, campaigned on. Not only campaigned on it, but then they held a referendum less than 2 weeks ago, in which the Greek people, a majority of them, voted clearly against doing any kind of anti-austerity deal, and they've been betrayed. They've been betrayed, and lessons must be learned from this.
Talk about the betrayal. What does that betrayal look like to you? I mean, it did seem like a dramatic, profound, and troubling flip-flop at the highest levels in Greece.
Well, I don't like the word betrayal very much. It's a very emotive word, but there are some English words that are exactly right, and this is exactly right for this, because there's no doubt twice, both on January the 25th and a week ago last Sunday, the Greek people voted to not have this kind of draconian imposition on them, and their government, with this mandate, went in the opposite direction. They did it knowingly and they did it willfully, and that is betrayal. And you're just watching the news tonight here in London, you can see a sense of, yes, of disappointment and everything, but a sense of this betrayal. I think what people, quite a few people, were expecting the Greek government to do was to repudiate this illegal and illegitimate and odious debt, as Argentina did successfully, to get rid of it, to say, we're not paying this debt. We didn't incur these debts. People have made a lot of money out of these debts. In any case, the Greek debt is less than 30% of even what the German debt is, and they're the greatest creditors. And we're not having a kind of coup d'etat by the German by the German money chieftains. That's what this is, basically, a coup d'etat against the people of Greece, not the government of Greece, because the government of Greece has complied. And I think that people who care about this, progressive people, have to learn from it. That, as you said, there was a lot of hope for this government, but we've had enough of hope. We had Barack Obama. He had hope coming out of his ears, and it was fake. And we've got to stop this. We've got to stop accepting these kind of postmodern, and I use that term because I think that's what it is, these postmodern political organizations, which are basically affluent middle class without any sense of real politics. We've got to stop regarding them as in some way radical, or we've got to make them radical. And there are many lessons from this, and they should be learned. There were many lessons from the election of Barack Obama, I thought, the complete collapse of the Democratic, any kind of liberalism within the Democratic Party. But on this one, this is a striking lesson, and it must be learned.
And talk about that lesson. I mean, there was so much hope. There we are with that word again. That's a dangerous word, I guess. There was that in the population. This leader was considered courageous. It was almost as if this was choreographed all the way through. Now, I don't want to get paranoid. I don't want to get conspiratorial in a certain sense. But I'm trying to sort of grasp. I mean, and it happened in the open.
Well, yes, it happened in the open because people are pretty good, you know. They give leaders they elect, especially when they elect them to go off and be their champion in a dire situation like this. They give them not only the benefit of the doubt, but they give them a lot of good faith. That's different from hope. They give them good faith, and that can be justified. And it was very complex. I mean, it's really difficult to get your head round what the hell was going on in these endless shuttle trips to Berlin and Brussels and all the rest of it. But to use a plain language, the Greeks were being screwed, you know, and a lot of pirouetting was going on by Alexis Tsipras and his finance minister. But that they were being done over. And at some point, those two, and Prime Minister Tsipras should have been the one, should have turned around to the Greek people and said, this is what's happening to us. I suppose there was a sense of that when he called the referendum. And that's the most shocking side to this, because that's really why I use the term betrayal. People thought he was saying, this is what is happening to us. What do you want us to do to go forward? And they voted overwhelmingly for him to reject the so-called austerity measures. And he did the opposite. And I think it's a growing up time that the political situation across our countries in the West is dire, really, because there is no opposition and there is very little significant dissent, in my opinion. We need to look to Latin America to find imaginative politics, to find forms of radicalism, forms of change. But in the West, the United States, Europe, and elsewhere, that is not the case. We have single ideology systems with two factions, basically. That's long been the case in the United States, which has led the way. But it wasn't always in Europe. After the war in Europe, the Social Democratic Project was given life by the fact that, by the promise that World War II and all of that would not happen again, and that promise has been betrayed. So We've been distracted. We've been distracted by identity politics. We've been distracted by issues that some people might think are important, but really are distractions. Because this situation in Greece is the main game. It's about having a society where elderly people are not almost 50% in poverty, as is now the case there. Of not having suicides among young people at such a horrifying level, as I read recently, of people, modestly paid people, not getting wages that bring them up to a decent standard of living, and so on and so forth. This is the main game. This is the fight. And it's about time those people who like to call themselves radical, left, progressive, whatever, it's about time they understood that. And that they chuck that word hope out, leave it, let it park it for a while, and got on with real stuff.
Real stuff. Well, that's what we're getting from John Pilger now. John Pilger is an award-winning filmmaker, documentarian, columnist, and really a hero of mine, I must say, with the great film work that you've done in all the toughest spots in the world where people are getting screwed over, just to use some common language as well. You mentioned, John, identity politics. Could you talk a little bit more about how that has been used against the people?
Well, I think we live in an information age, but we actually live in a media age. They're different. And so much of the media age is repetitive and manipulative and very powerful. You know, walk down any street in any, certainly in Europe, certainly in London, and watch people transfixed by that thing in their hand. And so there's a kind of digital slavery as well among people. And so the media age really plays itself through these devices, through all the forms of media that there is now. And it appropriates noble causes. It appropriates feminism, for one thing. I mean, sometimes I get the sense that so much of the issues of feminism are ruled from the media, not from the streets, not from those women who bear the burden so much of inequalities in working life and elsewhere, but are from the media. And the whole idea of identity of politics, that what matters is ourselves, is us, me. In the late 70s, it was called meism. At least they called it meism then. They don't call it meism now, but that's what it is. It's meism. I'm making a film at the moment. Part of that film is set in, I won't go into much detail, but part of the film is set in the Marshall Islands, where the nuclear tests were conducted.
Yes.
On my way back through Honolulu, I picked up at the airport a magazine that said, "Have a Bikini Body." I doubt whether anybody on that magazine knows where bikini was. And that the actual swimsuit, and it's got a very thin woman on the front, showing off her bikini body. I've just been interviewing people whose bikini bodies were lacking a thyroid gland. The bikini was actually launched in honor of the atomic tests in 1946. Who knows that? It's important. But I thought, there's the connection. This was some kind of women's health magazine, completely manipulative, lot of nonsense. how to have a better orgasm and how to eat carrots through your ears or something. And, you know, all the usual stuff, absolutely stuffed with advertising, manipulative, with bikini on the front.
You know, John, I'm remembering a guy by the name of Anthony Garusko, who was one of the veterans who was ordered to watch those explosions after the war. And he started a group, the head of this group, the International Atomic Veterans of the War, or something like that. And he said that the atomic veterans of the U.S. and all these people who live there were sort of the sacrificial lamb. I'm quoting him now, with the sacrificial lamb laid on the altar of the nuclear age.
Well, they were used as guinea pigs. They were used deliberately as guinea pigs. And they were examined over many, many years, not treated, some of them were. Right. They were examined as guinea pigs. And that's where the nuclear age began. And the nuclear age began, of course, with the devastation of the two Japanese cities. But in 1946, the big stuff was tested around Bikini right through the Marshall Islands. I think just getting back to what we were talking about, you know, the issues, Dennis, don't change. Their contours may change a bit, but the distractions these days are everywhere. And we're directed to regard ourselves. When I said feminism, I mean, you know, bourgeois women having absolutely everything they want is regarded in a lot of media as feminist. It isn't. It is not. It's something else. It's about privilege. That is a major distortion of feminism throughout the media, in my view. Whereas women at the bottom, struggling against the most hideous inequalities, violence in the home and elsewhere, and so on, do not have this voice because they're outside the whole realm of me-ism. And there are too many isms in this conversation, but they're all coming from me. But I think my most hated one is postmodernism because I know damn well what it means. It means dampening down real politics, real change, real radicalism. And I think those people running Greece organized their betrayal because they were doing that.
All right. Well, that takes me to the last part of the interview. And we are speaking with John Pilger, and we're delighted to be doing so. You've had your ear to the ground on this one. A lot of people are angry. They're talking about a lot of responses at the grassroots level. What's your read of this? What are you hearing? Talk about that.
I think people in Greece are stunned, actually. That's my reading. They're stunned and they're becoming angry. Tonight in Athens, there's the first big demonstration against Syriza. That's a tragedy because people regarded it as their party. But perhaps this is the beginning of the getting of wisdom in a way that it will not, that people in other countries like Spain, which is not dissimilar in its politics, and in Italy and elsewhere, where there's tremendous grassroots movements, they won't be conned again. They'll be a lot tougher on the people who go forth to represent them. I hope that's an optimistic view, and I hope that really comes out of this, because Europe isn't about grim German bankers and Brussels bureaucrats. It is about a lot of young people who have good politics, that is, they want to change the world, they want to make things better, and they're really yearning to get on with that.
I have to, before I let you go, John, ask you, and I always do because I think it's very important, how'd the press do on this one?
The press do what they usually do, Dennis. I mean, they haul out every cliche and jargon, you know. So Syriza was called hard left, far left, leftist, radical, blah, blah, blah. None of it has any meaning. None of them have the ability. None of them can explain it, the press. Yes, there was some not bad reporting, but in what I've read, you have to really navigate through the internet to find people, and thank goodness there is the internet, because there are people writing on it that know what they're talking about. But in the so-called mainstream, what a misnomer that is, I wouldn't. I think a lot of it is unreadable and unwatchable. I think what people do is should, and here it comes, Dennis, your best commercial, turn on Dennis Bernstein and Pacifica. And I mean that. That's where we should get, that's the media we should support.
Well, we certainly could use that support. Anyway, we have been speaking with John Pilger, filmmaker, documentarian, film. I guess the next one is going to be about the Atolls.
Well, it's not entirely. It is about, to add a bit of mystery to it, it's about America and China.
Well, that sounds
good. I'll leave it there.
Okay, that's beautiful. John, thanks so much for joining us on Flashpoints again.
You're very welcome, Dennis.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.